Sinister greetings, everybody. Those tunes are courtesy of the amazing Bobby Mackey. And I, of course, am your host, Tessa Morrow.
Way back in the 30s, in the little town of Wilder, lived an old man and his lovely little daughter. They ran gambling for a living. It was the best place around. All the men would come and lay their money down.
Thanks for stopping by and making Paranormal Prowlers Podcast part of your day. Whether you're listening from tiny remote village to the largest of cities and everything in between, lending me your amazing ears, it's absolutely appreciated. With over 100 countries listening in and the amazing countless cities who will be picked for this week's special city shoutouts: Jacksonville, Florida; Birkenhead, England; Hagerstown, Maryland; Belvedere, England; New Bedford, Massachusetts; and Colonial Park, Pennsylvania. As usual, everybody, thank you so much. It is absolutely appreciated. Where are you listening from? Today, we find ourselves in New York, where I'm going to be talking about two spooky locations, that being Letchworth Village, and the other is Willowbrook State School, both notorious locations and how people were treated. First stop, Letchworth Village, located between Stony Point and Haverstraw. We find ourselves in Rockland County, New York, about 40 or so miles away from Manhattan. Letchworth opens its doors in 1911. And ultimately, they do shut down in 1996, so not too terribly long ago. The property was grand, as they had over 130 structures scattered over 2,362 acres. Now that's impressive. Originally known as Eastern New York State Custodial Asylum, in 1909 the name is changed to Letchworth Village Home for the Feeble-Minded and Epileptics. And by the 1960s come around, it simply becomes Letchworth Village. They open with, like most places, good intentions. The namesake William Pryor Letchworth, he was basically a saint. He was a wonderful man doing amazing things. But sadly, he would die a year before Letchworth would open. If he knew how notorious his namesake, Letchworth Village, would become, I'm sure he'd be rolling around in his grave. Maybe it's a good thing he didn't live long enough to see these horrible things that were done to the patients. But man oh man, what Letchworth Village could have been if he were around. Probably wouldn't have happened on his watch. William Pryor Letchworth. I want to talk a little bit about the man. He was always a caring and giving individual. He donates 1,000 acres to the state of New York, and it is named Letchworth State Park. In 1873, he is appointed to the New York State Board of Charities. And it's no secret here that he was such a caring man. He really cared about children, especially those in need and who were excruciatingly ill. In 1857, Letchworth himself inspects every single orphanage and juvenile reform center, and he recommends that children under the age of 2 be removed from these types of institutions, as this was no place for them. And thankfully, the state of New York agrees. He is such a well-meaning man that in 1878, he is elected as the president of the board. He also served as the president of the National Association for the Study of Epilepsy and the Care of Treatment of Epilepsy. He truly cared about the well-being of others, and his actions definitely proved it. He wasn't some slime ball who would preach something and go behind everyone's back and sneakily do the opposite. Nah, that was not Letchworth's game. He was as real as they came. Sadly, the man who gave so much dies in 1910 at age 87 before Letchworth Village could even welcome its very first patients. Letchworth Village had a farm, an electric plant, a reservoir, classrooms, a morgue, of course, a dental office, And from 1914 through 1967, they also had an active cemetery. When it came to their patients, some consider them more like inmates, mind you, they had three different categories based on the individual's IQ: idiot, imbecile, and moron. None of those sound good to me. And sadly, in those days, if you suffered from something like, let's say, epilepsy, you could find yourself being committed in a hot minute to an asylum. As many asylums, it took two signatures to get your ass in, but several to get out, and many would never get out. Being that Letchworth Village was so grand in Acreage, it is no shocker that Letchworth was one of the most biggest employers in the area during this time. I mean, around 10,000 locals were employed here. It's said that basically every family who lived in the area either had a family member or members or knew somebody like a friend who worked there. No shocker. And it wasn't just locals, but patients themselves. They had jobs throughout the property. Depending on their IQ and whether they were an idiot, a moron, or an imbecile, they would do things like tending to the animals, cooking, sewing, hell, some of them even plowed fields. Sadly, reports of abuse date back as early as the 1920s. I guess they can't all be William Pryor Letchworths. By the 1960s, well over 5,000 people called Letchworth Village home. Now, this was a crucial problem, as Letchworth was designed to hold 3,000 people. And by 1935, they already had that limit of people living there, so it's no shocker that it would have an overcrowding issue. Letchworth is mentioned in a 1972 documentary titled Willowbrook and the Last Great Disgrace. Patients at Leavenworth, Letchworth, but I'm sure people felt like it was Leavenworth, heck, they may have even been treated better, oftentimes fell victim to horrible living conditions. They would usually go long periods before taking a bath, their health issues and concerns going straight down the old toilet. They were more seen as a huge inconvenience rather than a human being. When Geraldo Rivera's expose was released to the public in 1972, it proved to be cringeworthy to the horrified citizens. But, you know, it also ruffled some feathers. People who had connections to Letchworth denied any wrongdoing whatsoever, and some said that what Rivera was talking about was somewhat exaggerated, if you will. Some came out to share that while being employed there, they did not see any signs of abuse. Like, at all, not an ounce. And went as far as to say that the patients weren't terrified of the orderlies and staff, but they appreciated them, even hugging the orderlies at times. And you know, I'm sure in some cases that's exactly what happened, especially in the later years. But I'm assuming that back then, during Letchworth Village's earlier years, when overcrowding was such an excruciating thing, and things weren't going great, I don't think it was all cake and ice cream and hugs. I'm sure that they had some people who were staffed there that actually did care for the people and their well-being and did their hardest of jobs to help them out. I'm sure of it. I doubt everyone who worked there was sadistic and abusive. But saying that, though, I'm sure there were some who weren't so friendly and maybe put an act on in front of others, but treated the people differently behind closed doors. We see this in just so many different cases. In the 1930s and well into the 1940s, lobotomies are conducted here. In the 1950s, Dr. Hilary Koprowski, who was an immunologist, and Dr. George Jarvis, they test Hilary's live virus polio vaccine on patients. And I believe they were all children, actually. Before they conducted this experiment, Hilary would give the vaccine to himself first. They tested at least 20 children, and it proves to be somewhat successful, as 17 of the children developed antibodies to the virus, and none of the children developed complications whatsoever of any sort. So, it's not like permission was granted to do this experimentation. Thank the heavens it was successful. As we see in many establishments, like Letchworth, They were huge into using electroconvulsive shock therapy in the 1930s and through the 60s. They didn't only use this as what they believed to be treatment, but also testing and experimentation. Many would fall victim to the shock therapy, and they would not survive. For those who were lucky enough to see another day, they weren't treated, but their conditions actually worsened. No shocker there, and absolutely no pun intended. Female patients, besides being physically, mentally, and verbally abused, also fell victims of sexual assaults, not only by their fellow patients, but believe it or not, by the staff themselves. Someone who had authority, somebody who should have absolutely had the patient's welfare at heart. Because of these reported sexual assaults, these vicious rapes, suddenly these women, who were not pregnant when they arrived at Letchworth Village, were suddenly pregnant and expecting babies and delivering babies, the product of rape. It is sad that these babies then are taken away from the new mother and would either be adopted out or, mysteriously, just they vanished without a trace. I think it's safe to assume that some of these babies born here did not live to see a full day of life. Geraldo Rivera, he was not the only one to give people a sneak peek into horrible conditions of Letchworth Village. In fact, he wouldn't even be the first. Sometime in the 1940s, when Geraldo himself was just a baby, a photojournalist named Irving Haberman releases to the public cringeworthy, disturbing stuff nightmares are made out of photos of patients, showing some of them beyond dirty, as if they hadn't bathed in days or weeks, and completely and utterly naked. These are obvious signs of mistreatment, and some are shown sleeping on the dirty ground or on these tiny little mattresses that were strewn about the ground. Well over 800 people have died here at Letchworth Village due to the experiments and treatment that had gone wrong. Men, women, children, and yes, even babies. No one was safe. No one was off limits. There's a cemetery where a large memorial stone stands, and it has 9 columns, and in these columns is every name of a person who died here. Utterly heartbreaking. And above it reads, quote, "Those who shall not be forgotten," unquote. To my knowledge, Letchworth Village is no trespassing type of deal. I have read some cases where folks have sneaked in to take a look around, and please don't be that person. For those who have ventured in, which again, don't do, or near Letchworth Village, have claimed to hear the eerie sound of children laughter in vacant areas. People have felt cold spots and major temperature changes. Furniture has been known to move all on its own accord, and some people have seen balls of light floating about the area. Is Letchworth Village haunted? I'd be shocked if it weren't. With how much heartbreak, mistreatment, and death have taken place here, how could it not be haunted? Like, seriously. I would hope that the victims of Letchworth Village would not have to spend eternity roaming aimlessly about here, and that they could finally be resting in peace someday. Maybe someday. We now leave Letchworth Village and we drive over to Willowbrook State School, located in New York City's Staten Island. Willowbrook opens their doors in 1947 and closed down 40 years later in 1987. So they weren't open very long at all, but during their 40 years, they would sure do a hell of a lot of damage. Willowbrook was designed for 4,000 people, but no shocker here, we are again seeing a major overcrowding issue with a bustling population of 6,000. The state school is situated on 375 acres, so it's a hell of a lot smaller institution than Letchworth's 2,362 acres. In 1975, Willowbrook State School is so excruciatingly overcrowded that a federal judge has no other option than to demand the state school population dwindle down to a meager 250 people. That's 3,750 people less than it was actually designed for. That's how out of control Willowbrook was. In a 30-year span, that being from 1950 to 1980, it is believed that around 12,000 people died here. Willowbrook State School, home to murder, disappearances, suicides, and other types of death. It even has a connection to a serial killer who I'm going to talk about in just a moment. Now, just like Rockland County's Letchworth Village, Staten Island's Willowbrook State School was notorious, excruciatingly notorious, for the mistreatment of the patients. More appropriate word maybe is inmates. And the absolute horrible conditions that they were so forced to live in. And just like Letchworth, Geraldo Rivera is not the only one to grow public concern about the living conditions here at the state school. Robert Francis Kennedy came here in 1965, years before the documentary that was connected to Geraldo Rivera, and he was quoted saying, quote, "Patients were living in filth and dirt, their clothing in rags, in rooms less comfortable and cheerful than the cages in which we put animals in a zoo," unquote. Kennedy would also go on to refer to the state school as a snake pit. In 1971, a photographer named Eric captures haunting images at Willowbrook. He enters the property along with a reporter in tow named Jane, and together they would find what nightmares are made out of. Children sitting there with their hands anxiously cramped up against their ears, some only seen in underwear, others staring off into the distance, zoned out, dazed, and utterly confused. Haunting images showed thousands being uncared for, living in horrible conditions, and basically, if they were in prison, they would probably be better taken care of as an inmate and not as a patient here at Willowbrook State School. Help and care, it was desperately needed. These people, they were in grave danger. On crime raids, I find more details when it comes to Geraldo Rivera and the documentary. It talks about a doctor from Willowbrook, and he was a rare breed. He was actually one of the people who meant to do good instead of harm. He was trying to make Willowbrook a better and safer place. And instead of being praised, respected, and rewarded, he was treated like trash and he was let go from his position at the state school. So one fateful January day, the doctor has a secret meeting with a reporter who we now know is Geraldo Rivera. And this was before he was a huge name. During this meeting, it is said that the doctor gives the young, anxious reporter a key, offering Geraldo access to one of the state school's buildings, which is obviously usually off limits. So one day, Rivera would use that key, letting himself and his crew into building number 6, and were completely caught off guard by the overwhelming scene that lie before them. The residents, they were utterly filthy, again, like Letchworth, as if they hadn't showered in days, weeks, or God forbid, even months. The area was just plagued with filth and overcrowdedness. And I quote Geraldo Rivera, quote, "The doctor had warned me that it would be bad. It was horrible," unquote. And no shocker here, but years later, it still tugs at his heartstrings, even getting rather emotional when talking about it. Getting teary-eyed, he says, quote, "You know, I see that and it chokes me up to this very day. It's almost like an automatic response and it just evokes. And I haven't seen it in a while, but it just evokes that original sensation, that feeling that I had when I walked in there," unquote. 15 years after Geraldo Rivera's documentary is released to the public, the school finally closes its doors. But it's sad that it took a decade and a half for that to actually happen. The wheels of justice moved ever so slowly. Makes me wonder how many people in that 15-year period died. Earlier, I mentioned that Willowbrook State School has a connection to a serial killer. His name was Andre Rand, but he was better known as Cropsey, or the Pied Piper of Staten Island. Andre was a sadistic fool who took the utmost of pleasure in raping, murdering, and kidnapping. The victims were mostly that of young women and small children. He was actually an orderly, a custodian, and he also worked in the physical therapy department at none other than Willowbrook State School. So not only did he spend a lot of time there, but he was an actual employee there. In 1969, he kidnaps a 9-year-old girl. He strips her of her clothing, and he is about to rape the small, terrified child, when thankfully a police officer, who is driving nearby, manages to see what is taking place and is able to stop the disgusting pedophile from conducting his heinous act. Sadly, he will only serve less than a year and a half for his ever-so-serious crime. Quite the insult to this young child and her family, if I don't say so myself, and hell, it's an insult to the community. Maybe if he spent more time in prison, the list of his victims, or believed to be victims, would not be so long. In 1972, a 5-year-old girl named Alice disappears from an apartment building where the pedophile was known to spend quite a bit of time, as he was employed there at some point as a painter. He was often there. Sadly, the little girl is never found. Andre Rand is believed to be behind her disappearance and suspected murder. In 1977, an 18-year-old girl named Audrey leaves her Brooklyn home for a quick walk to a store for cigarettes. Located only a couple of short blocks away, not long at all of a walk. But something happens between that time, and she is never heard from again. And just like 5-year-old Alice, her body has never been found. The very next year, that being July of 1978, a Willowbrook nurse named Shin Lee disappears. She was last seen at the state school. More specifically, she was walking home from Building 11. But unlike the others before her, her body, it is located. She was proved to be brutally murdered, being strangled, and buried in a shallow grave on the property of the state school. A few months later, in October, still in 1978, mind you, a 42-year-old woman named Ethel is last seen at Willowbrook. She worked there as a physical therapy assistant. Remember, Andre also helped with physical therapy as an aide. She was heard arguing with a man right after she arrived for her shift. That arguing, sadly, turns into panicked screams. Unfortunately, it was still dark out, as it was early in the morning, and so witnesses could hear what was happening, but they couldn't see anything at all. They couldn't give a description of the man or anything. Objects of Ethel's are discovered scattered throughout the area, like a shoe, an earring, her pocketbook, buttons that were torn off of her jacket, and probably the most eerie of all, her dentures. A large search is conducted around the area, which contains woods, but like the other women and children, with the exception of Shin, she is never seen or heard from again. The following year, in 1979, Rand is guilty of raping two individuals, one being a woman and the other being a 15-year-old child. In 1981, a 7-year-old girl named Holly is last seen on Staten Island. She had walked to the store to purchase items for her mother, but sadly, she never makes the short walk back home. Fast forward a few weeks after Holly had gone missing, believe it was a little over a month, and her mother, also named Holly, receives a phone call from some creepy man, basically telling her that he is holding her daughter hostage, and that if she wanted to see her daughter alive and get her back, that she would meet this mysterious man so they can have sex together and videotape it in the process. Sex for the safe return of her daughter. Rape for the safe return of her daughter. I mean, how truly sick and disturbing can one person get? This woman is already beside herself, probably terrified. Where is her daughter? Is she cold? Is she going hungry? Is she being hurt? Is she being cared for? Whatever, you know. She is in a mourning and terrified panic state. And then this man pops up and he's playing games with her, like cat and mouse games. It's just horrible. Holly, along with the detectives, they go to a meeting place that had been planned out by this pervert. And no shocker here, the man never shows up. Now, I have to say that this man, Andre Rand, His car, being a green Volkswagen, it was seen in the area during the time the young girl disappeared. And eventually, her mother would identify his voice as being the voice that she heard on the phone from the man who was trying to extort her. So in 1983, he is released from prison when a 11-year-old girl disappears from Staten Island. He had a makeshift campsite in a nearby cemetery, very close to where the child and her family were staying in a nearby motel. And this young girl, she is never seen alive again. In 1984, a Staten Island local named Henry, better known as Hank, vanishes. The night he disappeared, the last person he was seen with was none other than Andre Rand. They were eating at a diner together. He remains a missing person to this very day. In 1987, yet a third person who has a connection to Willowbrook State School vanishes. A Down syndrome child, a 12-year-old girl named Jennifer. Eyewitnesses put the girl and Rand together, seeing them going for a walk. Well, fast forward 5 weeks later, and her body is found during a search for her. She was found by a retired firefighter. The remains are positively identified as that being of the young girl, Jennifer. By this time, the state school had been closed down, I believe, for a few months. The former state school employee, and we suspect as a serial killer, his campsite is close by where the grave was found. The following year, he is found guilty of murder. Apparently, while incarcerated, he has been very open about his crimes, oftentimes bragging about being a pedophile and a murderer. He even compares himself to Ted Bundy. Just like, wow. Clearly this man is mentally unstable. In 2004, Andre Rand is charged with Holly's kidnapping. Not her murder, mind you, but it is because of Holly's kidnapping charge that he finds himself not eligible for parole when it comes around in 2008. His new eligibility parole hearing won't be until 2037. If he lives that long, he will be 93 years old. Today, the serial killer remains in prison, and hopefully he will breathe his last breath in prison. Thanks everybody for listening in. Please be sure to stop by every single Monday for the newest of episodes. Till then,
I will see you next week.